a Tuesday morning, the Tuesday that kicks off Ag in Motion. Website is agandmotion.ca if you're interested in checking it out, or I've mentioned it a couple of times this morning. Their app, the Ag in Motion app, is perfect. Literally is your one-stop shop if you're going to Ag in Motion this year. If you're one of, they expect 35,000 people through the gates. If you're going to be one of them, that app will help you navigate everything from the exhibitors that are there, maps. It shows the schedule. They've got all kinds of drone demonstrations, equipment demonstrations, you name it. They've got it going on. That's the benefit of a large outdoor show, 640 acres of technology, equipment, and ag innovation happening at Ag in Motion. I'm happy to be down there tomorrow and Thursday, and I do hope that you'll stop by the booth if you're making that one of your destinations this week. Okay, we always enjoy the conversation that we can have with Paul Martin, Ralco business commentator, on a variety of different issues. It seems like every month or so we can reset the clock and take another look at things. I've got Ralco's business commentator, Paul Martin, joining me this morning by phone. Paul, thanks for taking the call.
Not at all. Good morning.
Canadian inflation rises 1.9% in June is the total. I just am looking at the story here. Is this going to have an impact, or is it still below the 2% number, likely not to affect interest rates in a couple of weeks?
Yeah, it will not affect interest rates. I think it is higher than, I think people had wanted, because we've got many levels of inflation to measure, but the one that the CPI is 1.9. But if you take out oil or energy, it is 2.7 or something. So it's still above the target line. And so the Bank of Canada probably, this coupled with previous information we got on job numbers that came out about a week ago, that there was a little bit more strength in the labor market than they had anticipated, that those are both signs that the economy does not need to be stimulated. Mm-hmm. So they'll probably hold the line on interest rates this month. If you're one of those people with a mortgage that was hoping you might see a quarter point drop, sorry, you're going to have to wait. Likely, the economists I'm following now are saying probably still two cuts this year of a quarter point each, but not till the fall.
Ralco business commentator Paul Martin is my guest. So I said this last week, Paul, that with regard to Donald Trump and the tariffs, if we think about how we were reacting when they first became, I mean, it was all everyone was talking about. Now, I mean, Donald Trump last week throws out, okay, Canada, 35% tariffs. It was a news story. It still is something we're monitoring, but it didn't quite throw us off the way it did the first time. Are markets reacting similarly, or are they still very volatile with the talk of tariffs?
Yeah, they've gotten less volatile. They are still reacting. There's this term that came out of Wall Street called the taco decisions. Trump always chickens out, the taco acronym. Apparently he got upset by it, but this seems to be his bargaining tactic, is he throws out numbers, sets a deadline. As it gets close, he says, oh, we're close on a deal, and so you'll postpone or, you know, water it down or whatever. So I think people are starting to feel the old boy cried wolf thing. It's interesting to watch the difference, though, between the stock market and bonds and sort of the debt side. The debt guys never really got very excited about it. The stock market guys, the equity players, certainly did. But even the equity players now are saying, the market didn't move very much on this latest one. In fact, here we are in record territory for stock markets. So those guys have pretty much given up on this, and they're saying, you can announce all you want, but we'll wait and see until it's actually announced or it's actually implemented before we start to react to it. So that's kind of, it seems to be the way it is. It's we're in bargaining talks right now between the U.S. and the rest of the world. And I think the longer this goes, though, the interesting thing that's sort of becoming evident is that everybody else other than the U.S. is starting to say, well, let's maybe put a common handbook together here and we'll all approach this thing in a similar manner, which will then leave the U.S. on the isolated side. And yes, it's the biggest economy, but it is not the only economy in the world. And so it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. There's lots of moving and I think back and forth and toing and froing to be done here before any of the stuff really sticks.
I mean, the federal government seems to be taking a cautious approach to this. Mark Carney meeting with cabinet ministers today, but there hasn't been an immediate reaction to it. You think about those early days, there was statements on social media, there was cries for counter tariffs, whereas now it just seems like, I don't know if that's the nature of the current government or just now where we're feeling 6 months down the road.
Yeah, I think the latter. It's just too hard to, we're trying to pin jello to the wall. This thing changes so much, there's no point getting too reactive right now. And the real questions for Canada, I think, and other jurisdictions is, do we do the retaliatory tariffs if they are ultimately implemented against us? And for Canada and Mexico, it is also unique because we still have the North American Free Trade Agreement there. And they talk about CUSMA compliant. You kind of have to be a nerd to follow that stuff. But it's more than 90% of all the goods that we sell to them are carried under the agreement. So, you know, it's pretty narrow, the stuff we're talking about. I suspect that... You know, the conversation here is going to be, should we even be retaliating, or should we just say, well, everybody's going to be faced with higher prices dealing with the U.S. It's the Americans who pay the price. Why would we raise the price of American goods coming into our country? So I think that conversation's one to be had yet.
So, you know, you bring up a good point, Paul. I want to chat about that for a second before we move on. Paul Martin is my guest because there is a lot of people that will text into this show saying, why are we getting twisted up about tariffs? Because they affect the Americans. They're the ones that have to ultimately pay the tariffs. The worry and the concern, though, and you and I have talked about this before, is the impact it has on Canadian businesses, whether it's exports, whether it's commodities, whatever the case may be, that they start basically not being used and the Americans start looking elsewhere because of the cost of tariffs. Have we seen a significant impact of those articles not CUSMA compliant by the tariffs?
Yeah, I think it's still too early to say because not very much stuff is really actually stuck at this point. But I think that there is some validity in that argument that, you know, if they put a tariff on Canadian goods going into the U.S., then American consumers will look for an alternate supplier. Fair enough. But if all those other suppliers are also facing tariffs, you know, it kind of makes it neutral for us, doesn't it? And so then it's only the American consumer that ultimately is going to be paying more. The issue at play is whether or not the American buyer can convince a Canadian supplier, for example, to eat some of that increase that's going to come through the imposition of a tariff. And if we draw a hard line on that and others around the world do the same, then this really just makes American consumers dig deeper into their pocket and become less competitive compared to the rest of the world.
Paul Martin, Ralco Business Commentator. Where's Saskatchewan at right now, Paul? I know you take the temperature of economies, not just as a nation, but provincially as well. We seem to be doing fairly well.
Yeah, we do. And that's one of the things that, you know, I get asked to speak and do presentations to boards of directors and strategic planning sessions and that kind of stuff. And it's my theme right now is that we need to be very discriminating or more discriminating in our consumption of information on the business side and the economy. Because I think Canada has multiple economies, despite the fact we're trying to get to one. But I call it the teeter-totter. When Toronto's up, we are down, and vice versa. Well, right now, we're up. But all the national news media is centered in Toronto, so they walk out their door and they ask their neighbor, are you getting laid off? And they think the whole country is like that, when in fact, you know, Western Canada runs a completely different economy than say, Southern Ontario. Right now, we are... You know, housing strong, consumers are strong, car sales are up. I was looking at the latest numbers this morning, just came out, and we're up, you know, nearly 1,000 units a month compared to where we were at this time a month in new vehicle sales, this time a year ago, I mean. And, you know, housing price is still very attractive. The labor market's strong. We have the lowest unemployment rate in the country. But to listen to the news in Toronto, housing prices are cratering and, you know, people can't find rent. And, you know, it's just a fundamentally different story. And manufacturing, especially the automotive side, is really feeling the crunch of the tariff thing. That's probably the only sector that is really feeling it. And so Ontario is not feeling very good about the economy when we should be out here thinking, no, this is our time. And we're in the up part of the commodity cycle, so we've probably got another couple of years to run with this thing being fairly strong, as you point out.
So I'm curious, are the same typical industries that we've relied on to drive our economy in Saskatchewan leading the way for us, or in these turbulent waters, have we seen other things come to the surface?
Yeah, you know, the big guys are the big guys. It's the food, fuel, and fertilizer thing that we talk about. And on the fuel side, the one that, you know, the conversation is changing dramatically, and that's how uranium and the nuclear side has become, you know, de rigueur. It's in vogue in the country or in the world right now. And, you know, if you want a proxy for that, just look at the stock at Cameco. It's over $100 now. I don't even remember the last time we saw something like that, or even when Cameco had a higher stock value than Nutrien. And there's about a $20 spread between those two right now, which tells you uranium is really cutting on. So oil and gas, we know, is strong. And now we're talking pipelines again, which will lead to more investment. We're seeing investment in the mining side and potash. But the amount of money flowing towards the uranium side is really quite remarkable. And I sort of jokingly say you almost need streetlights up at Key Lake for the volume of explorers that are up there, you know, pounding rocks and flying planes and trying to find the next big deposit.
Mm-hmm. You know, I another issue that I marked down that I wanted to chat with you about is the notion of supply management. It's in the news as much now as ever before. And I think the difference now, Paul, to me, seems that more and more people are understanding it. Right. The things like tariffs and interprovincial trade barriers were not supper table conversations until this last year. Supply management is now a little bit more in the news. People are understanding it more. Will we ever see this hot potato get dropped in Canada, or is it one of those things that's not going away?
Well, you'd, on the surface, you'd think it's not going away, but I think that you're absolutely right with your finger on the pulse here. We've never talked about this so much as we are right now. Thank you, Donald Trump, for putting that on the table. But you see those that are there to protect it becoming much more aggressive in their protection. Think about the legislation we saw just in Parliament here to, you know, never put supply management into negotiations in a trade deal. And everybody supported it. So it's as much political as it is trade related. But you are hearing many more people talk about it. And I think it's kind of like this debate that we had with the Wheat Board years ago, where there was that group that thought it was just insurmountable, but another group that said, no, we're going to keep fighting it. And ultimately, it did go away. Why? Because anytime you try and stymie the marketplace, consumers will find a way around it. And somebody somewhere in the country will find it politically palatable to start to break away or to start to be a dissident and start to change the rules a little bit. And I think that likely is going to happen out in this part of the country. And there's something called natural advantage, which is, you know, you should go to where the lowest cost of production is, where you're the most cost competitive, the most efficient. Well, food production and animal production, chickens, eggs, dairy, all of that stuff, you need land and feed grain. Well, Saskatchewan, Alberta, Manitoba have, you know, that in abundance. But we see this industry concentrated instead in southern Ontario and Quebec, and that's really related to population and politics, not about natural advantage. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, if we are going to try to find a way to make Canada more competitive, then we have to have that conversation and to stop putting political overrides over top of, you know, the economy. Here's the comparison. Look at the U.S. Where's the dairy industry focused? It's in Wisconsin, not in New York or California, the big population states. And where's poultry? It's in Arkansas, right? These are remote areas. Why? Because they have an agricultural base, and that's really what, you know, Canada is not being able to do. And as a consequence, you make the cost of the goods more expensive.
Mm-hmm. Paul, I think we're going to have to leave it there. Always appreciate you coming on to the show. I wanted to get a bit more into the Ag in Motion, which is kicked off today, but we'll save that part of the conversation
for next time. I'll just give you this. I'm doing my commentary on it tomorrow, and I brought Albert Einstein into the conversation. So there you go.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for joining me, Paul.
Not at all. Take care.
Rocco Business Commentator Paul Martin. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Carney is meeting with his cabinet ministers today, putting together a bit of a strategy as they continue to try and make some forward momentum and make some improvements prior to August 1st, the new revised trade line deadline. If you remember, they originally had said July 21st when Trump and Carney met at the G7. Then Trump came out and said, okay, 35% tariff unless we can get something together by August 1st. So he sets a new mandate. He says, there's no deals to be made. The deals are made. The deals are the letters. The letters I've sent. There's no more deals to be made. So Donald Trump's basically taking matters into his own hands. Canadian government not showing any immediate signs of reacting to that. Maybe we'll find out more after their cabinet meeting today. Okay, we take a break. When we come back after 11 o'clock, phone lines are open. This is a half an hour for you and I to chat, and I want to hear from you. Are you about having cash on hand, or are you all in on going cashless? More and more, this is becoming the norm. In fact, a couple of countries have really pushed in this direction, but since then have pulled back a little bit. I'm a guy that always wants to have cash in my pocket, but some would argue there's a better way to do business. Cash or cashless, that's where we go next here on 650 CKOM 980 CJME.